Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Hello and welcome to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles and podcasts. That's premierunbelievable.com. But now for today's show. We are diving into the Unbelievable Archives. The programme that you're about to hear was originally broadcast in October 2010. Justin Briley was joined by Lewis scholar Dr. Michael Ward and former Christian turned atheist Dan Barker. Here they reflect on the faith, philosophy and apologetics of C.S. Lewis. Let's join them for the third part of their discussion.
I would like to get to kind of, if you like, the more Christological aspect of C.S. Lewis's apologetic. Maybe briefly, Michael, you could lay out what is sometimes called Lewis's trilemma. Then we'll have Dan respond, and then you sort of pick up what Dan has to say.
Well, in Mere Christianity, Lewis develops this argument that Jesus Christ was either a liar, a lunatic, or the Lord of all creation. Lord, lunatic, or liar. That's the trilemma. And he comes to that position because he says that a man who said and did the things that Jesus said and did, claiming to be divine, claiming the ability to forgive sins, not only sins committed against him, but sins committed against other people, that behavior of Jesus of Nazareth on any other explanation than that he was who he said he was, namely one with the Father, could only be accounted for on the basis that he was, just sheerly lying. He was deceiving people when he said it, or else that he was mad. He was he was deluded about reality to such an extent that we shouldn't trust his claim to be divine. And, it's a relatively simple trilemma that he presents.
I think you see a sort of a form of it even in one of the Narnia stories, in the Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, when the children come to the professor saying, oh, Lucy's been telling us this strange story about going into a wardrobe and meeting a fawn. And the professor, rather than dismissing the story as they expected him to, says to them, well, is she given to lying? Do you think she's mad? And they say, no. Then perhaps the third possibility is true, that she's telling the truth. I'll read out briefly as well a segment of what he writes in Mere Christianity itself on this. He says, I'm trying here to prevent anyone saying the really foolish thing that people often say about him. I'm ready to accept Jesus as a great moral teacher, but I don't accept his claim to be God. That is the one thing we must not say. A man who was merely a man and said the sort of things Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. He would either be a lunatic, on the level with a man who says he is a poached egg, or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman, or something worse. You can shut him up for a fool, you can spit at him and kill him as a demon, or you can fall at his feet and call him Lord and God. But let us not come with any patronising nonsense about his being a great human teacher. Now, the trilemma has been something that has been obviously discussed at some in some detail. Dan, what's your initial reaction to the trilemma that Lewis first proposed in Mere Christianity?
Well, one thing C.S. Lewis was not a student of the Bible in any great depth. He read the Bible, but his understanding, from what I read, was quite simplistic. The trilemma is a false trilemma. there are more than those three options. There are at least two other options, and one of them is another capital L word, which many biblical scholars, and in fact many Christian scholars, put into the mix, and that is legend. Jesus may not have even said those things. His followers, the people who wrote the Bible, the people who put it together, could have created this person or created the words in the mouth of this person in retrospect, going back through history. So liar, lunatic, or Lord are not the only options. In fact, in my book, Godless, and in Losing Faith and Faith, I make a strong case for the legend framework for understanding the writings in the New Testament. Maybe Jesus did exist and said a few things, but if you do what Thomas Jefferson did and strip out the legendary from the historical, we see that many of those things that we might think were lunatic or lying were actually just words put in his mouth. But there's another option besides those four, and that is he might have been mistaken. He might have actually thought he was telling the truth. He might have not been lunatic at all. He might have thought that there's all of these signs were, you know, like my Christians today are mistaken. Michael is mistaken in his belief that there actually is a God and a devil and a heaven and a hell. I wouldn't call Michael a liar. I wouldn't call him a lunatic. I would just say that he has misinterpreted or fallen into accepting the interpretations of other people. So there are many other options for looking at this supposed great trilemma than just liar, lunatic, or Lord.
Thank you very much, Dan. I'm sure you've come across that yourself, Michael. I mean, any response there? I guess Lewis never, you know, made himself out to be a biblical critical scholar in that sense. Does the argument, the trilemma, fall down because, you know, what Dan says, well, what if it was just legendary, the sayings attributed to Jesus, etc.?
Yeah, Dan's right. Lewis wasn't a biblical scholar. But I think one needs to understand the context of this mere Christianity argument. It was in the context of a 15-minute broadcast pitched at a very popular level to a very unscholarly audience, and so Lewis wasn't going to get into questions of biblical criticism, which he did know a fair bit about, even if he wasn't a professional biblical scholar. He wasn't going to get into, you know, redaction criticism and form criticism and all these schools of biblical criticism that biblical scholars deploy in order to, you know, to try to test out the veracity of the scriptures. Lewis is basing his argument on the assumption that the biblical records are basically reliable, and he's not going to go into it any more deeply than that. But of course, yeah, I mean, he would recognize that, you know, logically speaking, there is this this option of the legend, but he's assuming that that's already been discounted, and, you know, he's saying if Jesus said and did the things that he's recorded as saying and doing, then we have this situation ahead of us. And to deal with what Dan says about the possibility that Jesus was just mistaken, well, I think that here we're slightly splitting hairs, that there's a there's a degree of mistakenness which most of us would ordinarily call madness, lunacy. You know, people are so mistaken about the nature of themselves and their place in the universe that we actually call them unhinged, lunatics.
So essentially, if someone came down the road and told me, I'm the Son of God, anyone who's seen me has seen the Father, you know, you'd have to say, they're a little bit more than just mistaken.
Yeah.
They happen to have come to the wrong conclusion.
Most
people would say, no, you're mad, mate.
Yeah, this is a particularly gross mistake, if mistake it is, yeah. And a mistake which is of such an order that I think it's not unfair to call it madness. If you're claiming to be one with the power that made the universe, I mean, that's a different order of mistake from my mistake, if mistake it is, as Dan believes it to be, that God created this universe and Christ died for our sins.
This podcast is an outreach of Premier Insight, and it's made possible through the support of listeners like you. And your support today is so vital. We want to thank you for your generous gift by giving you exclusive access to Science, Faith, and the Evidence for God apologetics course. This 9-module course invites you to learn from John Lennox, one of the most celebrated Christian thinkers of our time, through conversations with atheist thinker Michael Ruse and secular talk show host Dave Rubin. You'll be empowered to confidently speak into conversations on faith, science, and why believing in God is not only reasonable, but logical. The course is free to you to thank you for your gift to help Premier Insight equip more Christians to confidently speak into the biggest issues of our culture and defend their Christian faith with conviction and grace. To get access to science, faith and the evidence for God, simply go to premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. Thank you for your support.
I mean, unfortunately, we don't have the time, again, to go into an in-depth, textual, historical sort of look at the sayings of Jesus about himself and whether, you know, we can, you know, say that they are there. But there are plenty of programmes, and I would encourage you to look at them, particularly perhaps the one from about a year ago with Richard Borkham on this very subject on this programme. So I'll post a link as well to that. Lots of links to post from today's programme. But that's a very interesting programme on whether Jesus, the statements Jesus made about himself, whether they can be historically seen as authentic, as it were, about his messiahship, etc. That was Richard Borkham with James Crossley, I think. That episode of Unbelievable, I'll post up with this. I mean, but for me, what it comes down to is kind of what he starts that quotation from Mere Christianity with, which is what he wants to get to is people who say Jesus was a great moral teacher, because that, he says, is not one of the options. I mean, do you agree with that in a sense, that you can't just have Jesus as the great moral teacher, but even though many people like to talk of Jesus as the great moral teacher?
Well, if Jesus was so mistaken about himself as to think that he was, you know, he existed before Abraham, if he's so mistaken as to think that he's, you know, the ground of everyone's being in some mysterious sense, then it does throw a big question mark over, you know, his teaching when he says, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Why should we trust the latter if we can't trust the former?
How unique do you think Jesus actually was, Dan, as far as his moral teachings go and the things he said about himself?
Jesus, if he existed, was not a great moral teacher. He did say some good things. I keep talking about Thomas Jefferson a lot, but Thomas Jefferson said he dug through the words of Jesus to try to find some good teachings, and he found some, but he told his friend John Adams that it was like digging through a dunghill to find a diamond. The golden rule is not a bad idea. I would call it maybe a silver or a bronze rule, but it pre-existed in Christianity. Jesus didn't come up with that. He even admitted, he paraphrased it in the same pretty much way that Hillel had in the first century B.C., who was flipping a version that Confucius had even 500 years earlier. So love your enemies and those things. You know, all religions have good teachings in them. Who's opposed to world peace and love and forgiveness and goodness? If you look at all the religions of the world, you can pick out of them these great moral teachings that are really human teachings. They are teachings which confer survival advantage and confer community and so on. And it would be surprising if this Jesus character of the New Testament didn't say a few things like that. But on balance, his teachings were not good moral teaching. He had some horrible teachings in there, not least of which was his promotion of the idea of hell, a lake of fire and burning and torment and judgment. Even the Beatitudes are all predicated upon some other condition, you know, so that you can live long. They're not really true altruistic. He talked about castration. He said there are some men who should castrate themselves, and he that is able to receive it, let him receive it. He talked with glee, maybe metaphorically, about cutting off body parts in a sexual context. He talked about hating your father and your mother. He said, I came not to bring peace, but I came to bring a sword on this earth. So if you look at Jesus through just normal eyes, not the rose-colored glasses of a believing Christian and pick out all the good things, if you weigh them side by side, he was not an admirable moral teacher. Michael, you or I could have come up with a better system of morality than this Jesus character did.
Interesting. So Michael, Dan there, Jesus not the great moral teacher even that Lewis wanted to suggest people shouldn't just see him as. he's one among many who have said similar things, and indeed he said many things which we wouldn't say were particularly moral.
Yes, well, what Dan just said would please C.S. Lewis a great deal, because Dan isn't coming with any patronizing nonsense about Jesus being a great moral teacher. So that's good as far as Lewis is concerned. You know, Dan isn't falling into the trap of patronizing Jesus and saying, you know, he's great as a moral teacher, and yet we can't trust his statements about his own divinity. So to that extent, Dan and Lewis are on the same page. The question is, you know, if we really find reasons to trust what Jesus says about his authority, well, then the hard sayings, you know, the difficult sayings, we need to treat with a little bit more seriousness and ask ourselves, well, perhaps these hard sayings, which crack like a whip, Lewis says, he's not trying to disguise some of the toughness of Jesus' teaching. Maybe that toughness is the kind of toughness that we need, and given the moral decrepitude that we see both in our own hearts and in the world around us, you know, there's something pretty seriously wrong with this world. You know, maybe the remedy is going to be pretty hard too.
I mean, I suppose many people hearing Dan talking about some of those phrases, you know, I come not to bring peace but to bring a sword, you know, they would say, well, you've got to look at the context. You've got to look at sort of what Jesus was actually saying. He wasn't saying, you know, literally take up a sword and go and get your mum and dad or anything like that. He was saying choosing me may mean choosing, may put you against other people.
That's right.
You know, I mean, is Dan being fair to the text here, or is this just you and me, Michael, as Christians saying, no, you've got to look at it our way and not your way?
Well, I think, excuse me, many of those sayings that Dan just listed are typically hyperbolic ways, you know, familiar to a Jewish audience, hyperbolic ways of teaching. You overstate your case in order to make your point. You know, you make it inescapably clear the point you want to make, but that's not to say that, you know, that you must therefore hate your mother and father. It's just, he's just saying that if push comes to shove and you have to choose between doing what your dad says and doing what God says, then you have to set your face toward God and set your face against what you've been conditioned by your society to believe. But that's just hyperbole.
I mean, what's interesting as well is Dan suggests that, you know, Jesus was in no way unique in that sense. But in a way, neither did Lewis argue that Jesus was in that sense unique. He spoke of there being many expressions, in a sense, of God, but that Jesus was in some sense the true expression, the fulfillment.
That's a good point, yeah. I mean, I think it's in his book, The Problem of Pain, he says that actually there's not that much in Jesus's teaching which you can't find in other great teachers. The really peculiar thing, the unique thing about Jesus is not so much his teaching as it is his person and his office, who he was, who he is, rather than what he said and what he taught.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. We were hearing there from Lewis scholar Dr. Michael Ward and former Christian turned atheist Dan Barker. They were speaking to Justin Briley on An Unbelievable Show, which was originally broadcast back in October 2010. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles and podcasts. That's premierunbelievable.com. Thank you for listening and see you next time.